This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. In this week's program, a report from Darfur where a fire at a camp for displaced people has left thousands homeless, and praise for peacekeepers' support during a recent crisis in South Sudan. But first, more international support is needed for Somalia so that scores of citizens who left the country decades ago can return home. That's the hope expressed by Ambassador Mohamed Afe, Special Envoy for the Somali Refugee Situation with the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Countries such as Kenya, Ethiopia, Djibouti, and Uganda are hosting some 900,000 Somalis who fled civil war nearly 30 years ago. Jocelyn Sambira caught up with the Special Envoy at the UN-backed Refugee Solidarity Conference held recently in Uganda.
Because of the nature of this protracted situation, the Somali refugees continue to seek sanctuary and safety in the countries of the sub-region. So there was a need to mobilize a regional discussion. And I undertook a shuttle diplomacy in order to mobilize the regional leaders to have a dialogue over this particular situation. And I'm glad to report that that effort paid off when we had a summit of the heads of state and governments of the sub-region in Nairobi of 25th of March, which led to a very, very comprehensive declaration and action plan.
You're here at a summit that is entitled a Solidarity Summit for Refugees. We've been hearing a lot about the South Sudanese refugees, but we've not been hearing much about the Somali refugees. Is that your goal in coming here?
First of all, we need to appreciate the great efforts of the people of Uganda and the government of Uganda. They have shown extreme generosity to the refugees in the sub-region. Not only do they continue to host Somali refugees here, but they continue to host to date large numbers of South Sudanese refugees, Congolese, Burundian refugees, and refugees from many parts of the world. This is the only country in the sub-region which doesn't have an encampment policy for refugees. It has a settlement policy. It's a model that we think needs to be adopted by the rest of the sub-region, because it's a model that actually makes the refugees contribute meaningfully to the country where they stay, but also to the country of return when the return becomes apparent. We do not have in Somalia large outflows as we speak now. We're speaking about population that left Somalia 27 years ago. But as we speak today in Kampala, we have got refugees arriving from South Sudan seeking sanctuary in Uganda. There is need to show solidarity with the Ugandan people, with the Ugandan government, and I'm here as part of that international effort to show that solidarity.
In Sudan's restive Darfur region, some 4,000 displaced people are now living under trees following a deadly fire which destroyed the camp they were living in. The incident occurred earlier this month at the Korma camp, located some 80 kilometers from El Fasher, the capital of North Darfur State, which also is home to the headquarters of the Hybrid African Union UN Assistance Mission in Darfur, or UNAMID. Troops from the mission helped extinguish the fire and provided first aid to the injured, while UN and local humanitarian groups brought relief supplies, including water bladders, jerry cans, sleeping mats, and cooking sets. Jumbe Omari Jumbe accompanied UN officials who traveled to the site and filed this report.
Looking down from up here inside the helicopter, I can see the remnants of the Korma camp for the displaced persons. The camp has been reduced to a pile of rubble, ashes, and smoldering wood.
The fire caused great losses. 1,000 families, making more than 4,000 individuals, have been affected. We need instant help. It is a tragedy. People have no shelter, food, or water. Though UNAMID and other humanitarian organizations are helping, we need more assistance. People live on open skies. Children are particularly suffering terribly. There is a possibility of an outbreak of diseases.
That is the voice of Bashar Ahmad, leader of the camp's fire committee. It all started quickly and unexpectedly. People were settling down for their Ramadan breakfast, according to camp residents, when the inferno quickly surrounded them, blazing out of control. Yusuf Mustafa is the camp leader.
The cause of the fire was a deliberate act by a jealous woman, her husband married over her, and out of jealousy, she set the house on fire.
I am standing here in the middle of the Korma camp, which has actually been totally burnt out. Around me there are carcasses of animals who have perished because of the fire. Even a week after, there is a very putrid smell that drifts like incense over the hills and valleys of this village.
The head of UNAMID mission, Ambassador Kingsley Mamabolo, was given a chance to speak.
We came to see with our own eyes what happened here. But we also came to say the United Nations cares, to see what relief we can bring at these difficult times.
After 2 hours in the stricken village, we left the camp behind us with heavy hearts, thinking about how vulnerable men, women, and children will spend yet another night in the cold. From Darfur, this is Jumbe Omari Jumbe for Radio UNAMID.
Peacekeepers at the UN mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, are being praised by the top UN official in the country for their speedy response in support of a recent humanitarian emergency in the north. The 80 blue helmets from Rwanda were helicoptered into the remote village of Abarach, located in the Upper Nile region, where some 25,000 people had taken refuge from conflict. Their presence helped create conditions so that aid workers could come in and provide assistance to the displaced people, thus saving lives, said UNMISS Chief David Shearer, who is also the UN Secretary General's Special Representative for South Sudan. Mr. Shearer visited Abarach and spoke to Daniel Dickinson.
We saw a looming crisis here of monumental proportions. If cholera broke out amongst the 25,000 people who had gathered here, people worried about the insecurity, so we flew in about 80 Rwandan peacekeepers, and those peacekeepers gave confidence for humanitarians to come in a couple of days later, and the humanitarians very quickly got water, sanitation, and started treating people, and undoubtedly saved the lives of hundreds of people.
You've been in Abarach. The conditions are pretty tough.
Look, conditions here are really rough. I mean, people don't come here because they want to. They come here because they're scared and they're running away. When it rains here, as somebody just said to me, it's not so much mud but glue that the ground turns into, and it sticks to everything. So it's very, very tough conditions, and there's a rainy season now for the next few months. So the humanitarians that are here have already got their work cut out for them. It's very remote, very isolated, very tough conditions, and they're trying to keep now down about 10,000 people alive.
The 80 peacekeepers have now been withdrawn. What happens next?
They're withdrawn. They're within 30 minutes flight of here if they want to or when they need to come back. But we're going to follow up with what they call air patrols that will come in here, put people on the ground. It won't be a big presence. It'll be 20, 25 guys on the ground.
So it's a quick response, a nimble response.
Yeah, look, this is all about responding fast. It's something that we hadn't done before. It's something that our peacekeepers aren't known for, getting in helicopters, flying in at very, very short notice, establishing a base on the ground in a potentially hostile environment, and then getting on with the job of bringing others in to do the humanitarian work. It worked really well here, and it set a precedent and a bit of a model for the rest of our peacekeeping troops to look at, and helped us sort of practice and to get it all together. So I'm very, very pleased about this. I mean, at the bottom line here, there are hundreds of people who are alive today who would not have been alive if we hadn't done this, and that helps me sleep at night.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter under UN Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.